On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
One of the great pleasures that I have had later in my life is reading a book that probably most children read, but I had never discovered until just a few years ago, and that is The Secret Garden. And here to talk to us today about the backstory of this lovely, lovely children's book is Marta McDowell of Chatham, New Jersey, where she lives, gardens, and writes. She consults for public gardens and private clients, writes and lectures on gardening topics, and teaches landscape history and horticulture at the New York Botanical Garden. Her particular interest is in authors and their gardens, the connection between the pen and the trowel. Her newest book is Unearthing the Secret Garden, The Plants and Places That Inspired Frances Hodgson Burnett. It's from Timber Press. And Marta, thanks so much for making time away from your garden to stop and talk to us today.
Well, it's my pleasure, Dave. I just finished planting my bulbs this afternoon.
Ah, so you've had a busy day.
I did.
The really interesting thing about the author, Frances Burnett, is that she didn't really cultivate a substantial garden of her own until she was almost 50 years old, right?
And that was a surprise to me, too. Because it was really the way I started on this whole quest to say, you know, someone who wrote a book that's so special to so many gardeners must have been a gardener herself. And she was, but really only for the last 25 years of her life. So she came to it late.
She certainly had a difficult life in some respects. She had lost a parent when she was a child, which, sadly enough, was not all that uncommon back in the 19th century. And she lost a child of her own when he was 16. So she had some big grievous losses, had some unhappy marriages, but yet she wrote this and not just this wonderful book, The Secret Garden, but over 50 novels, 12 plays, and then, not even counting the what we consider, I guess, to be her biggest legacy of The Secret Garden. So she was a very prolific writer. Was she inspired by the beauty of the places that she lived? Because she lived in several different places.
That's right. So she was born in England, but after her father died, her mother moved the family. She was one of five children, and her mother moved the family to Tennessee. She had a brother there, so you know, the uncle kind of helped them along a little bit. And it was there that Frances started to write. So she wrote professionally from the time she was a teenager. I think she was 18 or 19 when her first story was published, right up until she died in her 70s. So she had a really long career. As you said, wrote a lot, but we think of her as a children's writer, which I think she would find very puzzling, but you never know what people are going to remember. And as you say, you know, she had some really hard times in her life. I think especially the loss of her son was just such a tragedy. And I really believe that part of The Secret Garden was a chance to rewrite the end of Lionel's story. You know, she couldn't save him in real life, but the young boy, Colin, gets better at the end of The Secret Garden, and
right.
He gets better through the power of a garden. You know, Frances had this lovely garden in England that she created, and after 10 years, the owner decided to sell this place that she was renting, and the loss of that garden factored in as well.
I was really surprised about that when, as I was reading the chapter on that's the Mayhem Hall in Kent. Is that the one? Was that the first one that she where she was so active and did an enormous amount of work to re-landscape it all and to research plants and bulbs and so forth and did an enormous amount of work, and it was all for a place that she was renting.
That's right. I mean, she always liked to live in a big way, Dave. You know, she made a lot of money. She was very generous with her money. She helped her family, and she gave to charity. But she also liked to spend money. And when she took up gardening, she took it up in a really big way. So, you know, here she's renting this property. It's 200 acres. You know, it's just like an old estate.
Right.
And, you know, she starts to buy plants in the thousands. And, of course, she also has gardeners working for her there. So, yes, she worked in the garden, but she had a lot of help as well.
No, that's very reassuring. It just, I was surprised she didn't die at a much younger age from wearing herself out. But still, to think that she worked for 10 years for a place that she didn't even own, and she just, did she not know about it going up for sale until it was too late to do anything about it? Or do you think at that point she felt like she'd done everything she could to that garden and was ready to move to a different one?
Well, there was this one remaining son. Frances had two sons,
right,
with her first husband, and one of them died. So her only remaining son was all grown up living in New York City, and he wanted his mother to come home. You know, come home, build a home near New York City, and I'll come see you on the weekends. And
right.
That was irresistible,
sure,
as you can imagine.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I have grown sons, too, and If I was alone and one of them said, why don't you come live near me, I'd probably pick up and go, too. Now, that was a long way to go. She was moving back from England back to New York. The Plan Dome Park that she builds in Manhasset, this is not the only place that she lives for the next 10 years. I found that pretty interesting, too, that she had a very different place.
That's
where she
right.
wintered.
That's right. So, you know, like so many Northerners, she was a snowbird. She did not like the winters, and so she decided that she would go to Bermuda for the winter. She said that was just like paradise. And, you know, Bermuda, I think, had that little touch of England as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, again, she rents a house there, you know, again, probably from around 1912, 1913, up almost till her death in 1924, and makes another garden there, but a much more like tropical garden. So she has a whole new plant palette.
I like the fact that she always loved learning about the different kinds of flowers. I have to admit to you that I wish my mom was still alive for me to give this book to her, because she was a huge lover of all things flowers. She actually had a gardener's encyclopedia that was one of her most precious possessions that she got when we first moved from Tallahassee to Daytona Beach in 1962. And when she died, we couldn't figure out what to do with it, because none of the four of us really do a lot of gardening. But we found a garden club in Daytona where we could donate the encyclopedia set, and we were very happy about that. I think she would have loved reading this book and finding out about all the different places that Frances Burnett transformed with flowers.
The Secret Garden for me is also one that brings up all sorts of memories of childhood, because I got the book as a child, and my family didn't give many books. You know, we went to the public library. So if you got a book, that was something really special. And I think I read that book until the pages practically fell out.
She also, well, she built the house where she was living at Plan Dome Park. And she talks about construction projects. And I just love this quote so much. I made a big note and said, be sure to mention this, because I've built a house before. And my dad was an architect, so I've been around houses being built for most of my early life. She compared building a house to planting a flower that turned into a seething, boiling, blasting, madly erupting volcano, devouring everything in its path. I just love that. And for any of us who ever built a house, there was a movie that came out probably 30 years ago called The Money Pit, and it was all about buying a beat-up house and transforming it. And one of the standard lines in the movie was people working in the house said, when will we be finished? They'd always say, oh, just about 2 weeks. And that went on for a year. So I understand the frustration that she is feeling
yes,
in building this house.
It's very funny because, of course, you know, she is still mostly in England when the house is being built. So she doesn't even have, like, a lot of the pain of day-to-day. She leaves that up to her son. And yeah. But she's getting these letters and telegrams, you know, by that time. And, of course, she's signing all the checks. And, you know, trying to do it long distance, that must have really been crazy.
Yeah.
And again, that's right when she writes The Secret Garden. So all that is going on. And she comes out with this book, which I think was kind of an escape for her, you know, back into that garden that she had loved in England. But she did love living in New York. It was right on the water on Long Island, so it was very pretty. And her son loved to sail. And he eventually married and built a house next door and had two daughters. So she had two granddaughters next door.
Yay. And she got to, I hope she read them, The Secret Garden, until they had it memorized.
Well, you know, it's interesting because her great-great-granddaughter wrote a little afterword for my book. So, and she's a gardener, so it's stuck in the family.
Yeah, yeah. In case you're just joining us, we're talking to Marta McDowell, who is the author of Unearthing the Secret Garden, The Plants and Places That Inspired Frances Hodgson Burnett. It's from Timber Press and available online and in bookstores everywhere. And it is a lovely little book. This would make a really nice gift for any occasion, whether for the holidays or a birthday or just someone that you know who loves to garden or that loves gardens, and maybe they live in the city and they don't have a place to have their own garden. They might enjoy reading about how this wonderful author managed to build so many different gardens of her own. Her first big book is one that has become almost a cliche in our American culture for hyperbolic 19th century living, and that is Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Yes, that's so true. Little Lord Fauntleroy was her breakout novel. So it comes out in 1886. The Secret Garden's not until 1911. And it really makes her famous. You know, she goes from a very successful, you know, sort of middle-of-the-road author to everyone knows her name. I think it was the way, you know, when Harry Potter came out, everyone was reading Harry Potter. And so, you know, everyone read it. If you read it now, I will say it's quite sentimental, you know, probably too sentimental for our modern taste. But it inspired this whole craze in fashion for little boys where their mothers were dressing them up in velvet suits with little lace collars. And that went on for years. I found an old picture of my mother and her siblings, and her little brother was there with this Fauntleroy suit in 1925.
Gosh. He must have had a lot of fights.
Yeah, he was a corker, so I imagine he could take care of himself.
That's a relief, because the pictures of some of the people, stage adaptations, that there was Elsie Leslie played the title role on Broadway when she adapted Little Lord Fauntleroy for the stage. And then Vivian Burnett posing as the inspiration for Little Lord Fauntleroy, a fact that he couldn't shake for the rest of his life. I don't know. It seems to me like being called, having his first name being Vivian, must have been that and having to dress like this would have just sort of been a killer combination.
Yeah, it was tough. It haunted him in college, and even in his obituary, you know, you go, oh no, this is haunting him past, you know, into the grave.
Truly.
It talks about the real little Lord Fauntleroy.
Oh, bless his heart. He had such long, beautiful, curly hair. Yeah, and I see the picture of your mom and her sister and sisters and her brother in the little Lord Fauntleroy suit, but happily not with the long, flowing, curly locks. Yeah, that really would have gotten him beat up. So, were people? Now, she wrote a lot of other things. So, if she wrote all these different novels, the two that we know her for these days primarily The Secret Garden. And those who know a little bit more about her realize that she's the one that wrote Little Lord Fauntleroy. But are there any other books or stories that she wrote that are particularly remembered these days?
Some people may remember A Little Princess, because that's like The Secret Garden has been made into television and, you know, movie-length films.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I do remember that.
A little girl in a school who has to, you know, go up to the attic because her father, you know, disappears and they think she's lost all her money and, know, anyway, adventures happen.
Right, right. Well, and like we said earlier on, you know, she was only 4 years old when her father died. It wasn't too much later that her mother died. And she was a teenager at that point, I think. And three of her siblings got married within a year and a half of their mother dying. She got married herself a few years later. So her childhood was fairly disruptive as far as the family connections and having parents. That couldn't have been easy, even if it was sadly not rare, it still couldn't have been easy.
That's right. And yet I will say she always, you know, strikes me in any of her letters that she leaves behind as a very optimistic person, you know, despite all of these problems through her life, and she was kind of plagued with these periodic bouts of depression, and yet she remained, you know, upbeat, and her books are very upbeat. So, you know, she took them and, you know, put them through her creative mill and came out with something on the other side that was very positive.
Now, you have at least a portion. I'm not sure. It's a lot of it, so I'm thinking it may be the entirety of the of a kind of short story called My Robin. Written in 1912.
Yeah, so in The Secret Garden, a robin figures very prominently. So this little bird befriends this very sullen, spoiled child, Mary Lennox. And Frances Burnett actually did have this kind of relationship with a robin in her garden in England. Now, when I was little, I thought she was talking about a robin, you know, like an American robin. That's the robin I knew. But actually, English robins are tiny little birds. They're not much bigger than a wren.
Oh.
And they're very inquisitive. And you know, they're very friendly birds. And I didn't know this until, you know, I was well into adulthood. So at any rate, Frances, at one point after The Secret Garden comes out, she gets a letter from a fan that says, you know, was the robin real? And she decides that she's going to write it down. And she writes a very tiny sequel, a little true story called My Robin, and talks all about, you know, the real robin behind the character in the book.
Now, you also have included in your book, Unearthing the Secret Garden, from Timber Press, you also have another short story, very short, called In the Garden, that she wrote, and it was published after she died, right? Her son bought the manuscript and had it published, and you were able to include this here, which is it's really lovely.
And she had gotten an assignment for a magazine called The Country Gentleman, which was a very popular magazine in the day. And it was an assignment to write three articles about her own garden and her experience gardening. So these were nonfiction pieces. And rather than sending them off to the magazine after his mother's passing, Vivian collected them and published them as a little tiny book. And it's very hard to find these days. You can buy it, you know, on the used market, but it's quite expensive. And because it's so long out of copyright, we decided to include it with my book, because it was one of the things that I wanted to say was, you know, she had things to say about gardening in more ways than one.
Well, it concludes by saying, as long as you have a garden, you have a future. And as long as you have a future, you are alive. That's lovely.
It is lovely, and I think it's so true. You know, if you have times of hardship or trouble, you can go out in the garden and see, how life changes from day to day and from season to season and how it goes on.
It occurs to me that many people make a joke about what's the world's oldest profession. But I have to say, as a student of the Bible, that the world's oldest profession is actually gardening.
That's right. That's right. We have to remember, in the Garden of Eden, there were lovely plants and
yes.
Probably not weeds.
Right. That was before all of that. Now, according to the press materials that I got, the book, The Secret Garden, has never been out of print?
Never out of print. That's a pretty good run, you know, 1911.
Yeah.
That's 110 years, if I'm counting
yeah,
right.
Yeah. And I want to say that I got a version to review 3 or 4 years ago, and I think it was from Candlewick Press. I review a lot of their children's books, and it kind of seems like they're the ones that did it. And it was a really beautiful edition, but it's out there. If people want to find a copy of the original book, the Secret Garden, they can certainly find one relatively easily. And if they want to find a copy of your book that is an extension of her book that tells us her story, includes some of these excerpts and everything, where do they go to find a copy of Unearthing the Secret Garden?
Well, certainly any of the online sellers, but if you have a local bookshop near you, they are precious indeed. So please give them the business first. But really, it's available in any of the standard places.
Okay, yeah.
And one thing that was really fun for me was trying to gather up all of the different illustrators and show examples of their work, because it's come out in so many editions. There are beautiful illustrations through the years.
Yes, yes. There are lots and lots of very cool pictures. I love this one that is has a Rolls-Royce town car, which is massive for the time. It almost reminds you of the hearse that the Munsters drove on the TV series in the 1960s. It's just a huge vehicle, and lots and lots of photographs of these wonderful places, and beautiful illustrations. It is really a lovely book. So, are there other people? Obviously, the thrust of this book is Frances Hodgson Burnett, but there are other people who have been inspired by gardens and plants to become authors too, right?
Absolutely, and I've had the real pleasure of writing about many of them. So I wrote a book about Emily Dickinson and her gardens, a book about Beatrix Potter and her gardens, and one about Laura Ingalls Wilder and the plants and places that she knew.
Right.
So, as you can tell, I like children's authors. Maybe mm-hmm. I've never grown up.
Well, Beatrix Potter, that certainly makes plenty of sense. Anybody who's ever read any of the rabbit series that she wrote would understand that. And Laura Ingalls Wilder, I mean, she grew up as a farmer's kid, and became a farmer and a farmer's wife herself as she grew up. Hadn't thought about Emily Dickinson, so she was a big plant lover too then.
Yes, and I didn't know that until I happened to go visit her home, which is in Amherst, Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
and I learned that she always loved to garden.
There is something very special about time spent in a garden. The friends that I have who have become gardeners as they have retired from their careers and that they have more time on their hands that have really gotten into gardening. It seems to invigorate them to get out and work in the soil, to be in touch with the earth again, and to be encouraged by plants that survive despite all the little bitty critters and molds and everything that are all out there that threaten to doom them. They take great joy, not even in making a garden for food so much as just a garden for something beautiful and decorative.
That's right. And I think there is something that's especially attractive to gardening as you age. You know, it's a way to, you know, keep fit and mm-hmm. be outside, which is a wonderful thing.
Yes, indeed. And I think the idea that Frances Burnett said, that when you have a garden, then you have a legacy and there's a future. Just like the old Chinese proverb about the man that plants a tree, not for himself, but for his children and grandchildren to enjoy the things that that tree will provide, shade and food and so forth, long after he's passed this earthly scene, that the tree will be there. And there is something wonderful about a garden.
Absolutely. They're real legacies.
I know our time is almost up. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us, either about Frances Hodgson Burnett or The Secret Garden or gardens in general, before we close?
Well, one thing I'd like to mention is that little walled garden in The Secret Garden, which is so central to the plot, she told a friend, you know, that was our rose garden, meaning that one she had in England, you know, that if it was as if it had been locked up for years and years and some hungry children had found it.
Hmm.
So it's a very magic book, and I hope that your listeners will enjoy it.
Absolutely. Marta, thank you very much for joining us today on The Bookshelf. It's always wonderful to have you here, and the book is just beautiful, Unearthing the Secret Garden, The Plants and Places That Inspired Frances Hodgson Burnett. It's from Timber Press and available at your local bookstores and bookstores everywhere. Do you have a website or anything like that?
www.martamcdowell.com, so it's easy to find.
Excellent. Marta, thank you again so much for making time to be with us here on The Bookshelf.
Thank you, Dave. It was an honor to be a part of it.
And our thanks again to Marta McDowell, the author of Unearthing the Secret Garden. The author of Unearthing the Secret Garden, The Plants and Places That Inspired Frances Hodgson Burnett. It's from Timber Press, and her website again is martamcdowell.com. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.